Chapter 12. Was it the Walrus? What I need is witnesses, Haroon decided. Once Iff and Molly tell the Walrus why I had to make my wish, he'll understand about his broken machinery. A wild party was getting underway in the royal palace, and it took Haroon a few minutes to find the chief water genie in the balloon-popping, ice, rice-throwing, streamer-waving throng. He finally located Iff, whose turban was a little askew, dancing frenziedly with a young woman genie. Haroon had to shout to make himself heard over the music and general hubbub. And then, to his horror, he saw Iff purse his lips and shake his head. "Sorry," said the chief water genie. "Argue with the walrus, not with the candle. Include me out. No can do." "But Iff, you've got to go," Haroon pleaded. "Somebody has to explain." "Explanation's not my forte," Iff yelled back. "Not my long suit. I'm no good at them. Not my thing at all." Haroon rolled his eyes in frustration and went in search of Molly. He found the head floating gardener at the second wedding party, which was being held on and under the lagoon for the benefit of those guppies, the plenty maw fishes and the floating gardeners, who preferred a watery setting. Molly was easy to spot. He was standing on the back of Butt the Hoopoe, with his hat of weeds tilted at a jaunty angle. He was singing lustily to an enthusiastic audience of fishes and gardeners. "You can melt dark ships, you can melt what's shadowing, you can melt ice castles, but you can't melt me." "Molly!" cried Haroon. "Help!" The floating gardener broke off his song, took off his hat of weeds, scratched his head, and said through his floral lips, "Walrus, you're on the carpet. Heard all about it. Big problem. Sorry, can't assist." "What's the matter with everybody?" cried Haroon. "What's so scary about this walrus anyway? He seemed okay when I met him before, even if his mustache wasn't really like a walrus mustache." Molly shook his head sadly. "Walrus, important fellow. Wouldn't like to get on the wrong side of him. You take my meaning." "Oh, honestly," Haroon shouted crossly, "I'll just have to go and face the music alone. Some friends." "No point even asking me, which you didn't," Butt the Hoopoe called after him without moving its beak. "I'm only a machine." As Haroon passed through the huge doors of P2C2E House, his heart sank. He stood in the vast, echoing entrance hall as white-coated eggheads walked rapidly past him in every direction. Haroon fancied that they all eyed him with a mixture of anger, contempt, and pity. He had to ask three eggheads the way to the walrus's office before he finally found it. After mazy wanderings around the P2C2E House, that reminded him of the following blabbermouth around the palace. At last, however, he was standing in front of a golden door on which were written the words, "Grand Comptroller of Processes Too Complicated to Explain. I am D. Walrus, Esquire. Knock and wait." "Here I am at last, about to get the interview for which I came to Kahani in the first place," Haroon reflected nervously. "But it wasn't supposed to be this sort of an interview at all." He took a deep breath and knocked. The walrus's voice called, "Come in!" Haroon took another breath and opened the door. The first thing he saw was the walrus, sitting on a shiny white chair at a shiny yellow desk with his large, hairless, egg-shaped head shining as brightly as the furniture, and the mustache on his upper lip twitching feverishly in what could have easily been anger. The second thing Haroon noticed was that the walrus was not alone. In the walrus's office, grinning broadly, were King Chatterjee, Prince Bolo, Princess Batchy, the Speaker of the Chatterbox, President Mudra of Choop, his aide Miss Blabbermouth, General Katab, Iff Molly, and Rashid Khalifa too. On the wall was a video monitor on which Haroon saw Guppy and Baga grinning at him from under the lagoon surface, grinning with every one of their mouths. But the Hoopoe's head stared out at him from a second such monitor. Haroon was flabbergasted. "Am I in trouble or not?" he managed to inquire. Everybody in the room burst into laughter. "You must forgive us," the walrus said, wiping tears of laughter from his eyes and still giggling slightly. "We were just pulling your leg. Just a little yoke. Little yoke," he repeated, and burst out laughing all over again. "Then what's this all about?" Haroon asked. The walrus pulled himself together and put on his most serious face, which would have been fine, except that then he caught If's eye, and that set him off laughing again. And that set it off again, and that set everyone else off. It was several minutes before order returned. "Harun Khalifa," said the walrus, getting to his feet, still slightly out of breath and holding his aching sides, "to honor you for the incalculable service you have done to the peoples of Kahani and to the ocean of the streams of story, we grant you the right to ask of us whatever favor you desire, and we promise to grant it if we possibly can, even if it means inventing a brand new process too complicated to explain." Harun was silent. "Well, Harun," said Rashid, "any ideas?" Harun was silent again, looking suddenly unhappy. It was Blabbermouth who understood his mood and came over to him, took his hand and asked, "What is it? What's the matter?" "It's no use asking for anything," Harun answered in a low voice, "because what I really want is something nobody here can give me."
"Nonsense," retorted the walrus. "I know perfectly well what you want. You've been on a great adventure, and at the end of great adventures, everybody wants the same thing."
"Oh, and what's that?" Harun asked a little belligerently.
"A happy ending," the walrus said.
That shut Harun up.
"Isn't it the truth?" the walrus pressed him.
"Well, yes, I suppose it is," Harun admitted uncomfortably, "but the happy ending I'm thinking of isn't something you can find in any sea, even a sea with plenty more fishes in it." The walrus nodded slowly and judiciously 7 times. Then he put his fingertips together and sat down at his desk, motioning to Harun and the rest that they should be seated too. Harun sat in a tiny white chair facing the walrus across the desk. The others sat in similar chairs that were lined up against the walls. "Ahem," the walrus began. "Happy endings are much rarer in stories, and also in life, than most people think. You could almost say they are the exceptions, not the rule."
"You agree with me then," said Harun, "so that's that."
"It is precisely because happy endings are so rare," the walrus continued, "that we at P2C2E House have learned how to synthesize them artificially. In plain language, we can make them up."
"That's impossible," Harun protested. "They aren't things you can put in bottles."
And then he added uncertainly,
"Are they?"
"If Khatam Shud could synthesize anti-stories," said the walrus, with just a hint of injured pride, "I should think you'd accept that we can synthesize things too. As for impossible," he went on, "most people would say that everything that's happened to you lately is quite, quite impossible. Why make a fuss about this particular impossible thing?" There was a further silence.
"Very well, then," Harun said boldly. "You said it could be a big wish, and so it is. I come from a sad city, a city so sad that it has forgotten its name. I want you to provide a happy ending, not just for my adventure, but for the whole sad city as well."
"Happy endings must come at the end of something," the walrus pointed out. "And if they happen in the middle of the story, or of an adventure, or the like, all they do is cheer things up for a while."
"That'll do," Harun said.
Then it was time to go home. They went quickly, because Harun hated long goodbyes. Saying goodbye to Blabbermouth proved particularly difficult. And if she hadn't leaned forward without warning and kissed him, Harun would probably never have found a way of kissing her. But when it was done, he found he wasn't embarrassed in the least, but felt extremely pleased, which made it even harder to leave. At the foot of the pleasure garden, Harun and Rashid waved goodbye to their friends and climbed with If onto the back of Butt the Hoopoe. Only now did it occur to Harun that Rashid must have missed his storytelling appointment in Kay, and so, no doubt, an angry Snooty Batu would be waiting for them when they returned to the Dull Lake.
But, never mind," Butt the Hoopoe said without moving its beak. "When you travel with Butt the Hoopoe, time is on your side. Leave late, arrive early, let's go, va-va-va-vroom."
Night had fallen over the Dull Lake. Harun saw the houseboat, Arabian Nights Plus One, lying peacefully at the anchor in the moonlight.
They landed by an open bedroom window, and as Haroon climbed in, he was overwhelmed by fatigue, and there was nothing for it but to flop into his peacock bed and go straight to sleep. When he awoke, it was a bright, sunny morning. Everything seemed as it had always been. Of flying mechanical hoopoes and water genies, there was no trace. He got up, rubbing his eyes, and found Rashid Khalifa sitting on the little balcony at the front of the houseboat, still in his long blue nightshirt, sipping a cup of tea. A boat in the shape of a swan was coming toward them across the lake.
"I had such a strange dream," Rashid Khalifa began,
but he was interrupted by the voice of Snooty Batu, who was waving energetically from the swan boat.
"Hoo, hallo," called Mr. Batu.
"Oh, Lord," thought Haroon. "Now there will be screaming and shouting, and we'll have to pay our own bill."
"Hoo, somnolent Mr. Rashid," called Batu. "Can it be that you and your son are still in your nightshirts when I am coming to fetch you for the show? Crowds are waiting, tardy Mr. Rashid. I trust you will not disappoint."
It seemed that the entire adventure of Kahani had passed off in less than a single night.
"But that's impossible," thought Haroon,
which made him remember the walrus asking, "Why make a fuss about this particular impossible thing?" And so he turned urgently to his father and asked, "Your dream, can you recall it?"
"Not now, Haroon," said Rashid Khalifa, who then called over to the approaching Mr. Batu,
"Why so anxious, sir? Come aboard, take tea. We will quickly dress and be off."
To Haroon, he said, "Look sharp, son. The Shah of Blah is never late. The Ocean of Notions has a reputation for punctuality to preserve."
"The ocean," Haroon urged as Batu drew near in the swan boat. "Please think, it's very important." But Rashid wasn't listening at all. Haroon went off somewhat disconsolately to get dressed, and now he noticed a little golden envelope lying by his pillow, an envelope of the type in which grand hotels sometimes leave nighttime mint chocolates for their guests. Inside, it was a note written by Blabbermouth and signed by her and by all of his friends from the moon Kahani. Goopy and Baga, who couldn't write, had placed fishy lips upon the paper, sending kisses instead of signatures.
"Come whenever you want," the note said. "Stay as long as you like. Remember, when you fly with but the hoopoe, time is on your side."
There was something else in the golden envelope. A tiny bird, perfect in every detail, cocking its head up at him. It was, of course, the hoopoe.
"That wash and brush up certainly did you a world of good," Rashid said as Haroon emerged from his room. "I haven't seen you looking so pleased with life for months."
You'll recall that Mr. Batu and his unpopular local government were expecting Rashid Khalifa to win them with people's support by telling upbeat, praising sagas and cutting out the glumpus yarns. They had decked out a large park with every sort of happy decoration, bunting, streamers, flags, and they had put loudspeakers on poles all over the park so that everyone could hear the Shah of Blah properly. There was a colorful stage plastered with posters that said, "Vote Batu," or alternatively, "Who's the one for you? Not just one, but two." And a large crowd had indeed gathered to hear Rashid, but from their scowling expressions, Haroon gathered that the people didn't care for Mr. Batu at all.
"You're on," snapped Mr. Batu. "Much praised, Mr. Rashid. You better be good or else."
Haroon watched from the side of the stage as Rashid went smiling to the microphone amid generous applause. Then he gave Haroon a real shock, because his first words were, "Ladies and gentlemen, the name of the tale that I am going to tell is Haroon and the Sea of Stories." "So you didn't forget," Haroon thought with a smile. Rashid Khalifa, the Ocean of Notions, the Shah of Blah, looked across to his son and winked.
"Did you think I'd forget a story like this one?" said the wink. Then he began.
"There was once in the country of Aleph Bay a sad city, the saddest of cities, a city so ruinously sad that it had forgotten its name." As you will have guessed,
Rashid told the people in that park the same story I've just told you. Harun decided that his father must have asked If and the others about the bits at which he couldn't personally have been present because his account of them was so accurate. And it was plain that he was okay again. The gift of gab had returned, and he had the audience right in the palm of his hand. When he sang Molly's songs, they all sang along. You can chop suey, but you can't chop me. And when he sang Bat Cheat songs, they begged for mercy. Whenever Rashid was talking about Khatam Shud and his henchmen from the Union of the Zipped Lips, the whole audience stared very hard at Snooty Batu and his henchmen, who were sitting behind Rashid on the stage, looking less and less happy as the story unfolded. And when Rashid told the audience how almost all the Chubwalas had hated the cult master all along, but had been afraid to say so, well, then, a loud murmur of sympathy for the Chubwalas ran through the crowd. Yes, people muttered, we know exactly how they felt. And after the two falls of the two Khatam Shuds, somebody started up a chant of, Mr. Batu, go for good, Mr. Batu, Khatam Shud. And the entire audience joined in. On hearing this chant, Snooty Batu understood that the game was up and went slinking with his henchmen off the stage. The crowd allowed him to escape, but pelted him with rubbish as he fled. Mr. Batu was never seen again in the Valley of Kay, which left the people of the valley free to choose leaders they actually liked. Of course, we didn't get paid, Rashid told Harun cheerfully as they waited for the mail coach to take them out of the valley. But never mind, money isn't everything. But, said a familiar voice from the driver's seat of the mail coach, no money is nothing at all. It was still raining cats and dogs when they returned to the sad city. Many of the streets were flooded. Who cares? Rashid Khalifa cried gaily. Let's walk home. I haven't had a good soaking in years. Harun had been worried that Rashid would be depressed about returning to the apartment full of broken clocks and no Saroya, so he gave his father a suspicious look. But Rashid skipped out into the wet, and the wetter he got as they walked through the shin-deep muddy water, the more boyishly happy he became. Harun began to catch his father's good mood, and soon the two of them were splashing and chasing each other like little children. After a while, Harun noticed that, as a matter of fact, the city streets were full of people, fooling around in the same way, running and jumping and splashing and falling and, above all, laughing their heads off. Looks like this old city finally learned how to have fun, Rashid grinned. But why? Harun asked. Nothing's really changed, has it? Look, the sadness factories are still in production. You can see the smoke and almost everybody is still poor. Hey, you long face, shouted an elderly gent who must have been at least 70 years old, but who was dancing through the flooded, rainy streets, waving a rolled umbrella like a sword. Don't you sing those tragedy songs around here. Rashid Khalifa approached this gentleman. We've been out of town, sir, he said. Has something happened while we've been away? A miracle, for example? It's just the rain, replied the old bird. It's making everybody happy. Me included. Whee! Whoopee! And he skipped away down the road. It's the walrus, Harun realized suddenly. It's the walrus making my wish come true. There must be artificial happy endings mixed up with the rain. If it is the walrus, said Rashid, doing a little jig in a puddle, then the city owes you a big vote of thanks. Don't, Dad, said Harun, his good mood deflating all at once. Don't you get it? It isn't real. It's just something the eggheads got out of a bottle. It's all fake. People should be happy when there's something to be happy about. Not just when they get bottled happiness poured over them from the sky. I'll tell you what to be happy about, said the policeman, who chanced to be floating by on an upturned umbrella. We remembered the city's name. Well, out with it. Tell us quickly, Rashid insisted, feeling very excited. Kahani, said the policeman brightly as he floated off down the flooded street. Isn't it a beautiful name for a city? It means story, you know. They turned into their own lane and saw their house looking like a soggy cake in the rain.
Rashid was still hopping and bounding gaily along, but Haroon's feet grew heavier with each step. He was finding his father's cheerfulness simply unbearable, and he blamed the walrus for it all, for everything, for all that was bad and wrong and fake in the whole wide motherless world. Miss Oneida came out on to her upstairs balcony. "Oh, too fine you are returned. Come, come, what sweets and celebrations we will have." She was wobbling and bubbling and clapping her hands for joy. "What is there to celebrate?" Haroon demanded as Miss Oneida came scurrying down to join him and his father in the rainy street. "To speak personally," Miss Oneida replied, "I have said good riddance to Mistress Angupta, and I also have a job in the chocolate factory. And as many chocolates as I require are free of charge, and I also have several admirers. But listen to me, how shameless talking to you like this." "I'm happy for you," Haroon replied, "but in our life it is not all songs and dances." Miss Oneida put on a mysterious expression. "Maybe you have been away too long," she said. "Things change." This made Rashid frown. "Oneida, what are you talking about? If you have something to tell..." The front door of the Khalifa apartment opened, and there stood Saroya Khalifa, as large as life and twice as beautiful. Haroon and Rashid couldn't move. They stayed frozen like statues in the pouring rain with their mouths hanging open. "Was this the walrus's work too?" Rashid murmured to Haroon, who just shook his head. Rashid answered himself, "Who knows? Maybe so and maybe no, as our friend the mail coach driver would say." Saroya had come out to join them in the rain. "What walrus?" she asked. "I don't know any walrus, but I know that I made a mistake. I went, I don't deny, I went. But now, if you want, then I am back." Haroon looked at his father. Rashid couldn't speak. "That's Sengupta, I swear," Saroya went on. "What a skinny, scrawny, sniveling, driveling, mingy, stingy, measly, weasley clerk. As far as I'm concerned, he's finished with. Done for, gone for good." "Cut, tongue, shut," Haroon said quietly. "That's right," his mother answered. "I promise Mistress Angupta is Katam Shud." "Welcome home," Rashid said, and the three Khalifas, and Miss Oneida too, fell into each other's arms. "Come inside," Saroya suggested eventually. "There is a limit to how much rain a person can enjoy." That night, when he went to bed, Haroon took the miniaturized butt the hoopoe out of its little golden envelope and put it on the palm of his left hand. "Please understand," he said to the hoopoe, "it's really good to know you'll be here when I need you. But the way things are just now, I honestly don't need to go anywhere at all." But, said the miniaturized hoopoe in a miniaturized voice and without moving its beak. "No problem." Haroon put Butt the Hoopoe back in its envelope, put the envelope under his pillow, and put the pillow under his head, and fell asleep. When he woke up, there were new clothes laid out at the foot of his bed, and on the bedside table was a new clock, fully operational, and telling the right time. "Parents?" he wondered. "What's all this? Presents?" he wondered. "What's all this?" Then he remembered. It was his birthday. He could hear his mother and father moving about in the apartment, waiting for him to emerge. He got up, dressed in his new clothes, and took a closer look at his new clock. "Yes," he nodded to himself, "time is definitely on the move again around these parts." Outside, in the living room, his mother had begun to sing. The end.